Understand, my friends, that the human soul must pass once again through every condition or phase of desire which it has formerly encouraged, pass through while still remaining the conscious self which had grown so familiar, longing, yearning, desiring with all its being to gratify the thirst and hunger for similar experiences which now torture its astral body, and unable in most cases even to obtain alleviation. In course of time the man is shattered, as it were driven by unquenched longings, until at last the realization dawns that the grey astral plane is barren of anything likely to gratify him. No picture can really paint, no description do more than attempt to speak of a man's life while driven by these longings through this underworld of the coarser astral plane. Of course, eventually and inevitably the man reaches a state of exhaustion because the fire of his being has all but flamed away. As a last resort his soul cries upon God. Where else can it turn in its last extremity? As soon as this aspiration to God finds birth, when at last the soul cries, "My God, why hast you forsaken me?" Then, according to the man's capacity, some tiny germ of the divine quickens, sufficient in itself to awaken a desire for more. Still the soul passes onwards, traversing the underworlds. Its every step to salvation must be earned. Even in the next sphere, the grey astral, which is lighter and brighter, the same law of salvation by effort operates. Not even the will the soul obtain satisfaction, but must strive ever onward and upward. My friends, there is always the other side of the picture. While a man may suffer tortures of mind and body both on earth and afterward in the world beyond, there are always times when he can and does attain the heights. So far as the earth life is concerned, we have always to remember that we come back into incarnation by our own volition. By right of the power of choice inherent in us, we volunteer for, we accept earthly conditions such as the ego, the true inner man, knows will yield the most valuable experiences during an incarnation. Do not imagine that any man's time of birth, or place of birth, or condition or environment of birth, happens by accident. The whole of his earth life, which is meant as a focal point from which a succeeding life in the beyond will evolve, must eventually fall into accord with a definite and divine plan. With what precise knowledge of this plan did the Master Jesus speak when he said, "A sparrow shall not fall on the ground without your Father, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered." Such is very truth. The whole plan lies in the mind of God, and he holds you ever in the cup of his hand. What man has to learn is to support himself through all experiences by means of his own courage and effort. He must not only find his real self, but also gain control over his own nature. Until this happens, he cannot begin to realize the tremendous potentialities of his spirit. The object of all life's discipline and experience is to awaken man to such a realization. By the word life I mean the soulless existence, not as you see it through mortal eyes but as a whole, as one vast experience passing from its apex, which is God, and traveling the full cycle of its existence, to return to that apex once more. Yes, yes, I can speak of these things because I was given a glimpse of these heaven worlds. Sometimes I seem to be lifted up, to be born as on angels' wings, to see these surpassing wonders revealed. Perhaps I have spoken too gravely about the underworlds. Do not mistake me, I have said before that in many cases, in most cases, these underworld conditions are never experienced. The newly released soul can rapidly traverse them while in an unconscious state. Then they make but a dim impression, much as when you dream at night. To such souls, which have set their hearts higher, they remain only like a dream, thank God, and most of them will wake on the plane known to the spiritualist as the Summerland, and they find a comfort and peace. On this subject, you may have many questions to ask. I will try to give lucid answers. Question: I assume from your teaching that the seventh astral plane is the underworld of desires and lusts? Yes, the lowest astral plane is one of burning and persistent desire, all of which the sufferer has engendered and fostered during his earth life. Those who go there are souls which have lived with neither consideration nor affection for any creature but themselves. You will ask about the plane above? Well, there we find life a little brighter. Although it is still shadowed with a grey, nest-like that of a November morning, a dim light shines here and there, because the inhabitants are developing affection for something, although perhaps only for nature or for animals. Throughout the soulless journey through the spheres, light comes only because the inner self is awakening. Stunted trees and 103 vegetation become visible, but the inhabitants still dwell in mists and are themselves clothed in grey. Being in fact wrapped up in self-centeredness, they still create for themselves similar clothing and environment. In this manner does their self-centeredness become outwardly actualized in a perfectly logical and natural manner. Question: what about the next, the third astral plane? Here we find brighter conditions, because there is a desire to do something for the fellow, next door, awakening interest in one's neighbor. Here normal earth conditions tend to reproduce themselves. We gather for public worship, we dwell in houses which are perhaps somewhat dilapidated and not over salubrious. Again, the inward spiritual conditions of the inhabitants become externalized in this manner. Many souls here, however, are striving towards the light, and this is why conditions grow more hopeful, more harmonious. We pass to the fourth plane, where things are decidedly better. Now we find beautiful scenery, happier and on the whole finer conditions than on Earth. We see the types of home described in many spiritualist books: the lakes, rivers, mountains, flowers and animals. This is in all a bright second edition or continuation of a comfortable life lived on Earth. Here the soul has attained to some mental and spiritual development, and having thus attained begins to create these conditions of harmony and beauty out of itself, for they are after all only the reflex of the soulless mental and spiritual level. Cannot you understand the reason why this should be? Paradoxical though it will appear, these conditions come about because the human spirit is at last able to modify the conditions and environment which surround it from itself, from out of itself, much as a man on earth is continually contributing harmony, or disharmony, to his family and home life. This is why, and how, comfort, serenity, harmony and beauty come into being in the next life. Question: if the astral plane's number 7, how can this be reconciled with the dominant number, 12, you have given us? 7 astral, 3 mental and 3 celestial planes, 13 in all? There are actually 12 planes, the 7th or lowest. 104 astral is so closely interwoven with the earth, so identified with earthly interests and influence that it should be considered with the earth. The first real astral is the first grey plane. Therefore the planes number 12, 6 astral and 6 heavenly. The last mental plane marks the stopping place or the nirvana where the soul meditates, contemplates and absorbs the experiences of its past. This is the resting place after every incarnation before the soul returns to gather fresh experience. Beyond these mental planes awaits, we will not call it the third death, but the final liberation from incarnation, for the soul then goes onward through the waiting halls into the celestial or cosmic consciousness. IO8 with such prospect as this in view, the man advances into the mental condition of his being. I would, however, make it clear that the soul does not pass through every mental plane of the spiritual life, but automatically migrates to the particular mental plane to which it is attuned. Thereafter in succession the soul will work its way up through every plane or grade of spiritual existence, and this is not because of the single existence on earth which it is supposed each man undergoes, and thinks of as his only mortal life, but by and through every incarnate life which he has ever experienced. For the soul of each man lives through many incarnations. During each separate incarnation it will mark out the plane or place on the mental plane to which it will someday travel, and where it will for a period dwell. Thus, in the course of time that soul will experience every phase and every condition of the spiritual life. Is this clear? Do you understand that during his life in the physical world man is always laying a foundation for the particular astral, mental, or celestial home to which he must go, so that he will attain a lesser or fuller degree of freedom and happiness in his astral, mental or celestial life in exact accordance with the degree of his aspirations and spiritual growth during his span on earth? I have now to endeavor to show the difference between the mental planes, whereon the soul emerges to dwell after the second death, the mental activities on these planes and the celestial life which lies beyond. For the mental body which man inhabits after quitting his experience in the astral worlds is a purely mental state, which differs widely from the spiritual state beyond. According to Arthur Conan Doyle, Spheres of Evolving Life and Consciousness. The mental plane is one of great power, on which the soul must exercise its full mental faculties, which, as it were, become unleashed and augmented when it enters this plane of existence. Nor can it quit the mental plane until a delicate balance has been reached between its mental and spiritual qualities. For a period it would seem that the soul must remain on the mental plane to grow in quietude, much as a seed is sown in the soil and left to germinate. Having passed into the mental world, man has to dwell there to obtain soul growth before emerging into the celestial world, bringing with him the spiritual power and equipment he has gathered during his journey. It is in the celestial world that the work of creation really begins. That is the glory and magnificence of the celestial world, and of its creative art, which is the real becoming of all creation. In this heaven world the soul of man absorbs a potency from the divine quality of Christ, having itself become almost angelic, it dwells among angelic beings sharing their luster. Would that we could endow you with some flash of intuition or insight which would reveal a glimpse of the harmony, the perfection and the glory of this heaven life. For it is here that the soul of man becomes conscious at last of its true nature, here that the ego knows itself a very part of God. After their passing from earth life the souls of men reach this celestial sphere of being in about 30 years of time, as men gauge time, and in the normal course of their development. Nothing drives the soul onward against its own inclination. Man's own power of free will is ever operative. If he wants to linger in the astral conditions, he can stay as long as he desires, so that a century or more may pass, or if he wishes he can sometimes pass quickly onwards, but only when he is longing with all his heart to become reunited with the God consciousness which is his real home. What can it mean to such a soul to relinquish everything, willingly to renounce its heaven world in order to retrace its steps earthwards to serve men? To understand you would first have to conceive a tithe of the wonder and harmony of the heaven life. Yes, there are forms the which one sees as angelic, perfect in their beauty, with faces most tranquil and peaceful, and shining with the glory of a great peace and love. Each mind there is softened, serene, and has become beatified. The air we breathe is shining, rare and fine. The harmony of a divine music breathes continually within the soul, which finds its supreme joy in some form of service, some form of self-giving. For you must not conceive this heaven world as a sphere of idleness or perpetual rest, although it is a place of eternal peace, for it is by dwelling in such peace as this that we learn something about the ways of creation, and in so learning we become ourselves creative. Yes, there are souls among us who willingly sacrifice such joys as these to descend again to the lower planes of earth to labor there, like a diver descending to the deep, or a collier to the bowels of the earth. So can the descending soul, donning its astral garb, take on itself something of the limitations of a personality again. Even then it can labor in those lower spheres only for a period, for it must ascend again, as it were to breathe, unable to sustain for too long so dense an atmosphere. Is it possible for souls dwelling in these celestial spheres to communicate from there with the earth? Yes. There are messengers for that very purpose. Few people understand the wonderful mysticism of parts of the Bible, as when Jacob dreamed he saw a ladder placed between heaven and earth, and saw angels descending and ascending it. People will perhaps regard this as a childish story. Yet that is just what is still happening. Communications are indeed coming down from the heaven world to the earth people, alas, that so much is lost in transit and that so much confusion exists concerning the right methods of communication. We have spoken before about St. Paul's words, "In the twinkling of an eye we shall be changed, and when the last trump shall sound." This means the great call which comes forth from the Supreme, from the Christ heart, to which all men shall someday find they are related. For soon or late each and every soul must awaken to that call, hear that peal of the trumpet of the Spirit which is summoning it homewards. Men will then leave 112 behind all that was of the earth, earthy, in themselves. By this surrender all their individuality will be preserved and enhanced, and their lower personality die and be shed. Do not regret it, for although personality is of the earth and soiled by earth, it has yet been a means to an end, a means necessary if man is to undergo experiences which are invaluable on his upward climb to God. Yes, teach the people about communion with the spirit world, but for God's sake teach them the truth. Do not offer them a fool's paradise by telling them that everything will be lovely there. I can assure you that the life after death is a serious matter, not to be regarded lightly, not a subject to be glossed over as with a varnish paint. For when a man passes from his physical to an astral condition, he has to face the fruits of his past life on earth. There can be no more backsliding then, for life has to resolve itself into a forward march. Proofs. What are these proofs that the people of the earth cry out for? They do not know what constitutes proof of the after life. They only consider something that is capable of being conveyed to any of their five physical senses as proof of spirit power, and yet the great proof, the proof there is no gainsaying, is manifesting itself in a very definite and drastic manner all over the face of the globe. Let us return to a further description of the mental plane, which is not to be confused with the celestial. Although these terms may appear baffling, the several planes in the mental world must be clearly subdivided. Thus, after the second death, the soul enters first a mental plane where it finds itself surrounded by the previous creations of its own mind. It is here that the chief characteristics of the man of cold, hard, intellectual thought — the last sentence seemed incomprehensible at the time, but the proof of the existence of a spiritual law has since been demonstrated. For in these years which preceded the outbreak of war in 1939, the nations were surely sowing the seeds of war by reason of sloth, selfishness, godlessness. The war when it came was a demonstration of how certainly, how speedily spiritual laws operate even in the material world have found expression. The delicate balance which exists between the intellectual and the intuitional part of man must now be taken into account, for on the next or second mental plane the soul responds to the intuitional or spiritual light which is now drawing it upwards and onwards, ever higher and nearer to the central focus of its being, which is the Godhead. On this second mental plane the man becomes conscious of an intuitional inflow which tones down his hard intellectuality and enforces a purer intuitional conception of existence. In this condition the man himself becomes creative, since from this plane springs all the creative urge or activity which takes an ultimate form on earth as art, literature, music, religion, science, all of which are varying expressions of creative energy derived from a higher source. Here, in short, man finds himself able to contact the source of all his higher inspiration and creation. From this intuitional, but still mental plane, you understand, he passes to the higher, the third and last mental plane. Now he enters a state of quiescence. For, as the man journeys upwards, he is ever shedding the vestiges of that stratum of himself which is of the earth, earthy, but absorbing the lessons he learns on his journey, lessons which are retained by his ego and become a part of himself. When the man attains the condition of quiescence, peace and tranquility on the intuitional plane, which is not mere lethargy, his spirit remains perfectly conscious, although mentally in a state of soliloquy, able at last to see himself as he really is, to gauge the complete effect of his life, not only as it has affected the lives of his fellows on earth, but in relation to the whole creative principle, to estimate the magnitude or otherwise of his personal contribution towards God's evolving plan of creation. The third mental plane is a condition of withdrawal from outer form into an inner relationship with the universal power, a condition where man's inner ego contacts that universal sphere of spiritual being and attainment. Whereas life on the planes below has been in definite form, now there is to some extent an absence of form. It will be very difficult for the man of earth to imagine such a condition, concerned as he is with his form, life. When you attempt to visualize or imagine the universal, that great omnipotence whom you worship and love as God, your mind cannot conceive him in any particular form, yet within your being and outside in the whole universe at all times and in all places. God's pulsating life radiates power, the effect of which you recognize by its myriad manifestations as an intelligence ever proclaiming its handiwork. When you pray to a mind that understands your mind, to a heart that loves and is compassionate to you. It is nevertheless utterly impossible to formulate that mind or heart. For this reason the cosmic Christ manifested as a man on the earth, that he might give form or provide a nexus, in order that men and women might make contact, according to their capacity, with the Godhead. So when we reach the third mental plane we find absence of form, that is, man's ego is no longer limited, confined or bound down to any particular form of being, to any particular kind of body. He is rather spending his time, not only in withdrawal into the center of himself, but also in expansion from that center until his being contacts the whole, the life universal. It is true that it is possible for men and women still living on earth to contact this sphere, but the effect is so powerful, the plane so tremendous in its vibration that the effect can even be harmful to the human organism. We touch on a vast theme. You have occasionally seen advanced souls living in your midst at whom men wander, yet for some unknown reason a sudden collapse and death awaits them. They sometimes die of a disease which the medical world cannot diagnose. Again we say that until medicine deigns to study the laws governing man's spiritual being it will continue to be confronted and baffled by obscure diseases. Do not mistake us, we do not mean to convey that everyone who dies from an obscure disease is necessarily of high spiritual consciousness whose end was due to contact with this third mental plane. It has seemed necessary, however, to explain that this universal power can shatter man's body, unless it is sought in humility and age for truth, and with a pure and selfless motive. You will ask what is meant by this? We reply that within us all lies an inmost center of our being, a divine birthplace of man's spirit, which even to reach, much less to comprehend, is beyond all intellectual striving or attainment. If a man attempts to reach this power by intellect alone, without due attunement, without growth of the spirit, there must inevitably be disaster. Yet if that same man will strive with mind and heart and spirit to seek the kingdom, holding fast in simple and childlike faith, he must reach that plane of the universal and there receive truth and power and life from the fount of all life. We repeat, my friends, that on this third heavenly plane there is a withdrawal from expression through man's outer form into his inmost depths, and that in such withdrawal there must follow expansion and absorption into the universal life. With this the question will immediately arise, has such a man forever sunk his individuality and shed all traces of desire forevermore? No, my friends, no, the man has then become greater, nobler, with his individuality enhanced. Having tasted at last of the divine fruit, being at last aware of his own inherent divinity, he has become at one with God, even as the gentle one once said, my Father and I are one. Even then, the man can still return to earth. Although his ego has become like a seed deeply sown or embedded in the life, more abundant of which Jesus spoke, his ego can emerge again, assume a form and step by step re-enter its former state of being, until if the man so desires he takes mortal life on himself once more. I have spoken of a period of quietude where the soul reviews its past. This is before it passes onwards, for on those mental planes the man is more or less concentrating on himself, is laboring within himself, concerned now not so much with his output, as he had been on earth, as with his intake of truth regarding himself. To cover the ground again, we have outlined three mental planes, that is the lower mental or intellectual, the intuitional, and the higher mental which contacts the cosmic forces. We then pass onwards to the true spiritual planes, the celestial. The Buddhists refer to this heavenly condition as nirvana, a term which well expresses the peace, the tranquil retracement by the soul of man over all the experiences it has gained. Have you ever heard about the waiting halls of heaven? Yes, there are such places, and the soul whose fulfillment is in complete lives for a period in this mental state or plane, as a dweller in the waiting halls, having then gathered up its knowledge and reviewed all its past experiences both on earth and elsewhere. There the soul waits until the call comes for it to go forward, or else until it accepts the order to descend again into mortal life, to take another dip, as it were, much as a diver goes down into the sea. N6WE have now referred in turn to the astral, the mental, the celestial, and the Christ spheres. There may have been some confusion of terms, and this is a matter I wish to clarify. After the astral and mental planes, then from the celestial we pass to what has been referred to as the Christ sphere, but which I desire to name henceforth the cosmic or universal sphere. In this condition of heavenly life dwell great beings which are freed from rebirth on any physical plane of existence, and which are now concerned not only with the earth life but with all life, with the life of the universe. From this plane creative masters are sent forth, responsible for the life of the souls of lesser beings dwelling on other planets and in other spheres of existence. Thousands of years, I can only speak in terms of earth time, must elapse before the ego attains its full expression and development, and only after gaining all possible knowledge through physical existence does it pass beyond the halls of waiting, beyond even the celestial planes into a still higher plane. What term can prove adequate for this? The Christ sphere. The place of at, one, meant with Christ. The rapture of love perfected, of perfect fulfillment which is found, yes, even these are waiting for the perfected soul of man. When in transit between the mental and celestial spheres the soul becomes conscious of a spiritual element which it lacked before. This is due to its closer contact with the Christ sphere, from which the creative ones, the exalted ones, may descend to merge themselves into an earthly existence, to take on themselves mortality by supreme sacrifice. This is what happened when the Master Jesus made his renunciation, but you have yet so much to learn concerning his life and death. It is unnecessary for man to pass through physical death in order to contact all the planes of spiritual life. This is knowledge vital to the being and happiness of every man. For man has power to reach out, to contact, and to respond to the influences which emanate from all the planes of spiritual being even while enmeshed in the flesh, the difference being that when he is released his spiritual life gains a sweet intensity. Having lost a physical body, the more surely does the soul, experience which he now undergoes afford him a richer and greater sense of reality in his being. Again and again we say that all the spheres of spiritual life are, or can be, reached by incarnate man, who can thus draw his experiences either from a hell of desire or a heaven of ecstasy. Chapter 6, The Problem of Good and Evil. Most High and Perfect Spirit of the Universe, Great Architect, we come before you praying that you wilt guide us in our ways. May the wisdom of your mind inspire our work. May the beauty of your form be made manifest in our work. May your love inspire our every thought and action towards our fellows. May we pass through life's journey in safety, and come at last into your glorious presence, perfected through you. Amen. Tonight power seems to come with such dynamic force that I am almost swept off my feet, and could be driven like a straw before the blast. This seems a good simile for the power of the Spirit which is poured down onto the earth at this time. In the course of this outpouring you will see both national calamities and international disturbance, but ultimately a rebuilding of humanity wing to this power of the Spirit. The same message was given to me during my earth life. I can but repeat it, and say there will be physical catastrophes. As a result a great new continent will emerge, where there is now but a waste of ocean, and there will be an equivalent subsidence of land. The fiat has gone forth. Even now we can see these creative powers at work. A race of men will evolve considerably in advance of the humanity of today. Together with these changes will come refinement of the physical substance of the earth itself, and of the spheres which surround it. No time factor is given for these happenings, which may lie in the distant future. Page 132. But this is a diversion. We now return to the subject of the planes above the astral, to the first mental, to the intuitional plane above it, and to the third plane of intelligence or wisdom.